Baseline.
To baseline.
Very good execution of a two-on-one fast break.
Coast.
To coast.
Takes it all the way down the lane.
This.
Two-hand jam.
This is the NBA Today.
The NBA Today.
What's going on? It's Monday. It's the NBA Today podcast on ESPNRadio.com's Pod Center. I'm Ryan Russillo. And today we're going to have Royce Young from thedailythunder.com, part of our True Hoop blog network. He blogs about the Thunder. And, of course, this team's been so great all season, and we have him right after they have a terrible, terrible loss. But apparently they were at a Jay-Z concert the night before, a day game. So I don't know if that plays into it, but some bad stats. But overall, we're going to talk about the Thunder and how good they've been. Your boy's hurting a bit today, not feeling that great. I feel like an Antoine Walker step back three with about 20 seconds left on the shot clock. So we're going to power through this. So we got Royce Young. We'll get to some emails, but I want to start with some of the topics off of the weekend. Andrew Bynum's a headliner. He strained his left Achilles game against Minnesota. They're saying now he's a two-week away, you know, timetable here, but all of us kind of roll our eyes, and I think even Phil Jackson did with his commentary about what the window is for Bynum's return, because you go back two seasons ago, they kept saying he was going to come back with a knee injury. He didn't. The Lakers lose to the Celtics in the NBA Finals, and the thought was if they had had him, maybe they would have won. I don't know if that's the case. Last season, he has another knee injury. He gets back in time for the end run of the playoffs. But if you really look back at it, he really wasn't much more than just a bunch of fouls against Dwight Howard. So, in essence, at the beginning of this year when I was so excited about Bynum, I'm thinking, here's a Lakers team that won a title without this kid, and now he's putting up these kinds of numbers. Now, do I think that Bynum and Gasol have ever been a perfect fit this season? No, not really. And Gasol clearly is a different player as far as a production standpoint when Bynum's not there getting the touches. But when you look at the record, it's like, well, wait a minute, how bad can it really be? I mean, there can be aesthetic things from a basketball standpoint that you look at and you say, well, hey, you know, this is screwing up Gasol now, and Bynum's, I think of the two, Bynum's perhaps more selfish when he's out there. I'm not even saying that's a bad thing, but it feels like Bynum has to be rewarded more, where Gasol can go longer stretches without getting touches and still maintain his effort throughout the game. And that happens a lot with young big guys. If you don't get them a couple touches, you don't let them take a couple shots, then they're going to start mailing in on defense. That was actually one of the old Ben Wallace theories with Detroit. Larry Brown, Rick Carlisle, they actually wanted him to take some shots. And as a basketball fan, you're like, that's insane. Why would you want this guy shooting? But you felt like if you got him four or five shots through the course of the game, it was just going to help his defense and rebounding that much more. So to sit here and say that we know when Bynum's coming back, we don't know. There's 3.5 weeks to go, 11 games for the Lakers. And he actually had been playing really well the last two games prior to the Minnesota game, averaging 20 and 13. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. But without Bynum, I think that changes the landscape of what kind of team this is. Whereas they'd be favored, I believe, against everyone to now maybe you start examining it a little bit closer. It was interesting to see the Knicks and Rockets play against each other, considering how many elements were involved in the trade to send Tracy McGrady from Houston to New York, and obviously Kevin Martin coming over from Sacramento. But other pieces in that trade, despite the numerous draft picks or the ability to swap that the Knicks included just to get salary cap space, they sent out Jordan Hill, who was a lottery pick. They took him ahead of Brandon Jennings. And Jordan Hill is an interesting case because when I watched him at zone, I didn't love him. His numbers and the improvement in certain numbers, shooting percentage and rebounding rate, were really impressive. So it's not a huge surprise that Daryl Morey, who's a numbers guy with the Rockets, that he would be looking to acquire him. You know what, though? It could have just been an added piece, and maybe Morey doesn't love him. But there are number people, sabermetricians from a basketball standpoint, that I've talked to when Hill was coming out, saying that, well, you know, you really want to play, you know, close attention to how good Hill is. And I was always, and I watched a lot of tape of him, and I was a little indifferent. Well, Hill has played a lot better, and he goes for 25 minutes, where the Rockets come back and beat the Knicks 116-112 yesterday. Hill gets 13 points, 5 rebounds in just 25 minutes, but he basically let Houston be a better team when he was out on the floor. Louis Scola, whose numbers have actually been pretty good recently, he plays only 23 minutes in this. But the bigger story has been the quote about Mike D'Antoni essentially saying that, hey, I play rookies, I don't play bad rookies, because Hill never really got all that much run when he was playing with the Knicks. Now, Hill's actually playing like 20 minutes plus the last three games. But if you look at it for the Knicks, he only got into 24 games, played about 10.5 minutes, and this is a guy that was taken eighth overall in 2009. if I had to bet on this, like if I had to take a side saying, hey, Mike D'Antoni screwed up and didn't play Jordan Hill, and Jordan Hill says, hey, he's entitled to his opinion, he's got a system, and obviously he was a little upset about it. I mean, who wouldn't be? You're a lottery pick, you want to play, the team stinks, they don't have a good record, and you're still not good enough to get minutes. So for any rookie, especially a lottery pick, coming from a big program in Arizona, that's going to be frustrating for you. But if I had to choose a side, like eventually who'll be right and who'll be wrong, I don't think Hill's going to be a great, great player. I think he's going to be a role guy, and that was a big reason why, after everything was said and done, even though this front office for New York actually drafted Hill, they didn't feel like it was that big of a deal to move him out. A lot of ex-Knicks get involved in this one, and there's an energy level that a team is going to play with that is probably not normal when you are going up against guys that have been traded for your team. And obviously, Jared Jeffries had a big, big fourth quarter, and he hadn't played a ton of minutes, but he had played almost the entire fourth and put together some good defensive plays. How about this on the rumors page? This one is pretty surprising. And by the way, if you want to go to our playoff standings, our odds center for John Hollinger's numbers, he has all the odds on who's going to make the playoffs and who isn't. And he does it all season long. But as we get closer, with less than 20 games to go, we start to get a better sense of who has what. And the Bucks, the Milwaukee Bucks, are 100% playoff certainty now, which is pretty remarkable. And the turnaround, you know, now that they're starting to beat good teams. Well, they have been beating good teams, but they beat Denver at Denver 102-97, and that's after a back-to-back in Sacramento where they won another close game 114-108. They have Atlanta tonight, and then the rest of the schedule breaks down: Philly, Miami, Memphis, the Clippers at home. So this is a five-game homestand. So Milwaukee, I don't know if they're going to catch. Actually, now it's looking at the conference breakdowns. I believe, yeah, Atlanta is tied from a game standpoint with Boston for the number three. But Milwaukee's still 6.5, so there's probably just not enough time left for them to catch them. But 8-2 in their last 10. But the problem is that everyone in the East is winning. Cleveland, 9 of their last 10. Orlando, the same thing. Boston, 7-3. Atlanta, 7-3. Milwaukee, 8-2, as we mentioned. Miami is 7-3. Charlotte, 7-3, despite losing two in a row. Toronto's the only team that's losing, but Chicago, at this point, basically just wants an extra chance at the ping-pong ball. They should be tanking. I'll get to tanking in a second. Or they should be tanking like crazy right now. On the other side of the West, another group of teams where every team is better than 6-4 in their last 10. Lakers 7-3, Denver 8-2, Dallas 8-2, Utah 7-3, Phoenix, Oklahoma City, San Antonio all 7-3, despite San Antonio's loss last night in overtime at Atlanta, which Al Horford had a monster game for them. Great job. Big clutch plays at the end. And Portland, despite their loss to Phoenix late last night, Phoenix just keeps winning games. They've won four in a row. Portland has gone 8-2 in their last 10, and they're now 4.5 games up on Houston and Memphis for that final spot in the Western Conference. So not only do we have the playoff odds, we have the lottery odds as well. We'll get to Indiana in a second. But in the rumors page, and I'll have to give it to one of our emailers, NBAToday@ESPNRadio.com, who threw out a theory about Darko and being like, if Minnesota treats him really well, will Darko go back to Europe and tell all his boys, hey, Minnesota's awesome? And then Ricky Rubio will decide, hey, now I want to go to Minnesota because Darko said it was awesome. I feel like that's still a reach. It was a reach then. But whatever Minnesota's doing with Darko, he's enjoying it more. But how about our boy Chad Ford getting killed, killed in this story? Because the first line, I don't even know who writes the rumor stuff. It says ESPN.com's Chad Ford must be thrilled at how well Darko has played since he's become a member of the T-Wolves. He started the last few months, or he stated, excuse me, that he hated playing in the NBA. I'm not going to read it word for word. You can go to ESPN.com's rumor page to read it. But it's basically just saying, like, Chad was the only guy that liked Darko. That's so unfair, first of all, because I remember the year Darko came out that Darko actually, there was a ton of front office people that really liked him. And when you look at Detroit, they were still able to win despite getting nothing from Darko. Yeah, Carmelo would have been really nice for them. Bosch probably a better long-term fit if he was still on that team. Bosch is probably the guy that should have gone too when you looked at how that team was built. But Darko with Minnesota is averaging about 23 minutes a game. Field goal percentage is good. You know, he's giving you 6-6, which isn't a ton, but it's better than just being an ornament on the bench like he's been through other stretches. So he said that possibly he could re-sign. But I love that this turns into like Chad Ford's the only guy that liked Darko. Because when you watch tape of Darko, you saw a 7-footer with perimeter skills who had a toughness, a nastiness to him, showed that he liked to compete, which is one of the first things that I look at in any player. And I would argue that he basically is just one of those guys that doesn't get it. You know, even if he has the skills, he doesn't get it. And it happens all the time, but it's even more, there's more of a focus on it when it's a dude named Darko from Serbia, when people are like, eh, who's this dude? He is from Yugoslavia, but I thought he played for a Serbian team. He's still only 24 years old, by the way. And I had one scout, like, after a year of him doing nothing, I said, what do you think? And he's like, dude, he doesn't even shave yet. Shut up. Give him some time. So Chad wasn't the only guy, so I'm sticking up for Chad a little bit. Dwight Howard had 16 technicals, and now he's being called Little Rashid. I'll tell you right now, you need a few more technicals than one more. One more gets him suspended. He said he's probably going to get another one. The league seems to keep going back and rescinding some of these technicals on guys they like. Down the road, Howard has had, I believe, two rescinded. I don't have the exact number. That's a bit of a guess. But he's being called Little Rashid. Just to remind everybody, Rashid, towards the end of his Portland run, had 38 technicals in 99, 2000, and then 2000, 2001, he had 41 technicals. Rashid averaged a half a technical a game for an entire season. That is, I mean, obviously everyone who's listening to this podcast understands my Rashid love. That's sarcastic. But just, I always feel it's important to point some of those things out when you think about, hey, what's that guy's focus today? I don't know. Getting really mad at everybody and feeling like everyone's out to get him. And then he's mad he doesn't get calls later on in his career. I don't know. Huh. I wonder why that is. Okay. One more thing that I wanted to do was talk about, the tanking thing in general, because it's going to come up a lot more. And the NBA gets killed for this. This is one of the things where there's, and you're going to think because I'm an NBA guy that this is why I'm saying it, but, you know, it's not like I love the NBA and I think every other sport is terrible. That's not the way I've been ever. I love the NBA, but I love a lot of other sports. They all have their flaws. But let's not use each sport's flaws as a reason to hate that sport and never like it, you know? Yeah, there's a lot of timeouts in the NCAA tournament. I can't stand it. Doesn't mean I'm going to change the channel. My girlfriend made me watch Marley and Me last night. That movie sucks. You know, I don't know what to tell you. Obviously, the dog is... Well, wait a minute. I don't want to go spoiler alert here, so... If you haven't seen Marley and Me and you're listening to this podcast, I don't even know who you are anyway. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
My son wanted me to change the channel to the Disney Channel as the games were winding down last night. I was like, dude, yeah. There's only 1 second left. That took about 10 minutes.
Yeah, see, that's
so
a problem.
For, you know, the six-year-old kid, he's like, dang, Dad.
Yeah, they had a game last night, too, where they actually just didn't even bother getting the Pittsburgh game. They got the clock back to .4. They had one chance left, and you didn't even... You didn't even hear about
didn't
it.
Didn't see it.
It was like message in a bottle by the time I found out what the hell happened there at the end. But yeah, let me restate that. If you haven't seen Marley and Me and you're listening to this podcast, then you are the man, is what I meant to say. I don't want to do a spoiler alert thing. It's just, you know, my girlfriend went with the whole you've watched basketball the whole time. I'm like, look, I feel like death, and this is going to make me feel better. And I'm not really a dog guy. I'm sorry that I'm not a dog guy. It's just that... I had to live with a bunch of dogs in college because I went to a school where it was like really cool to have a dog. And it was like all these rich kids with their stupid dogs that they never trained, never took care of, always had to lend to somebody else. And when they graduated college, they like gave the dogs away, but they just wanted a dog for like 2 years. And I'd have dog hair in my food all the time. They would take my seat. They would sleep in my bed. One night I came home really late at night and I was trying to open something in the fridge and the dog came up from behind me and scared me. And I hit my head on the freezer door because it was open and I knocked myself out for like an hour. So, you know, to think that I'm going to sit there and cry to Marley and Me, like, I get it. It's 2 hours. The dog isn't trained and you guys are growing as a family. I got it. There's your cliff notes right there.
Sorry. As a good producer, I should remind you, we were talking about tanking.
Yes. No. I'm right on it because that's where we're at right now. Okay. Tanking. I am pro tanking. I guess I was talking about double standards because when people look at the NBA, they're like, how do we fix this tanking? We've got to do something about this. Mike Greenberg, Mike in the Morning, he had an idea a couple years ago that was like, you should give the first pick to the first team that's outside of the playoffs with the best record. Hey, terrible idea. Because that would be the Bulls with John Wall. Let's put it that, or, you know, even worse than that, that would actually be, if I didn't look at the East standings, that would be Houston or Memphis getting the number one pick. It is so hard, and I'll say this all the time, it is so hard to improve your team through trades because of the restrictions and free agency because of how rarely cap room comes around and free agency as a model of building your team is flawed to begin with because essentially you're paying for someone that the current team doesn't want to pay for. Then there's a winner's curse because you have to overpay to outbid everyone else because you only get cap room so often. And that's going to happen this season. You're going to see some dudes get paid. And the funny thing is then the owners are going to complain that the whole system screwed up. And that'll be right after all the owners write huge checks to players that aren't superstars. We have an email on that I want to get to the guys right on. But if you're telling me, your best chance to get better is a top five pick, which it is, and I've studied this, and maybe at some point I'll rewrite this and put it up on the page. Tank away, man. Tank away. Like, nobody gets mad at September call-ups in baseball, right? Nobody says, wait a minute, we're supposed to have the full nine out there. Nobody gets mad when a pitcher gets shut down at the end of the regular season to get ready for the playoffs. Nobody gets mad when we play backup quarterbacks the last few days, or we have these NFL games that teams have locked up. I mean, people got really mad about the Peyton Manning thing, but for the most part, we accept it. Like, we want our players to be rested. Peyton Manning's probably the only time, because of them going 16-0, and I thought that they should have gone for it, would be a time where I'd get upset. For the most part, we accept all that, but then we want to be outraged when NBA teams that already stink want to lose some games to position themselves better for the number one overall pick, when the number one or number two, number three, number four, number five can dramatically change the course of your franchise. Then you have Indiana that apparently wants to start winning games now, and they move themselves from the fourth spot in the lottery to the eighth spot in just a matter of a week, and that, to me, makes zero sense. And teams can say, hey, we're competing. If I'm a fan, I want my team to lose every single game the rest of the way, and that's how I feel about tanking. NBA Today at ESPNRadio.com. That's also how I feel about Marley and me.
Email NBA Today at ESPNRadio.com.
What's going on? We got emails here. NBA Today at ESPNRadio.com, just like that other guy said. Here's our man, Nathan. More needs to be made of the new CBA and how fiscally insane it's going to be for teams. This is something we just talked about. All right, think about this. The Knicks signed Eddie Curry to a massive deal. It defies description. But imagine that a year later, a new CBA comes in, and suddenly the most they could have signed him to is like 3 years and $30 million, as opposed to the sign-a-trade where it was 6 years and in the 50s. But they have him for six and 60. It wasn't quite $60 million, but you get the point. You can strike out twice now, and has the same effect as striking out once this offseason. So basically the point is, all right, forget LeBron, and I agree there. LeBron is the one player that if you sign, it changes everything for your franchise. If you were lucky enough to get him, my stance has always been that he's not going to leave Cleveland. It is an educated guess, but I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I just can't see him saying to Cleveland, hey, see you later. And as I've said, if he decides to leave, it has nothing to do with Cleveland. Like, if somebody is dumb enough to ask the question, what could Cleveland have done? The only thing they could have done was gone like Star Trek, dug a hole around the city, and then put it in its own little island, like right off of Lower Manhattan. That's it. That's all the franchise could have done. And I don't even like Star Trek all that much, but I watched the new one, and it appears that drill was out of control for planets. But we don't have to worry about that. That was like a thousand years from now. So that's probably not going to happen. But here's the point. Like, all right, Nathan wants to say, give me Sam Presti any day. Where he goes, I'll go. He feels like it's ruined the front office. Let me just get to the base of the whole thing. Is it, yeah, that's what's going to happen. Is that some teams have been lying and saying they want cap space and that they're going to blow their fans away with all the guys they sign. And I don't think that the market meets the demand with the amount of teams that now have cap space, significant cap space. So there will be a trickle down of like a Rudy Gay who will get offered a ton of money. Memphis has said that they already are going to match. But if he gets like a 5-year max outside deal, I don't know that they're going to max that. I mean, he's good, but he's not that good. And that's the problem going back over 10 years. Like, we had a lot of players that would say, well, give me this deal. And the team would be like, hey, you know what? We think you're really good, but you're not one of the top 10 players in the league. It'd be okay if we don't max you. And the best player on his team felt like it was his right to be a max guy. Like, it was a cool thing to say, like, I'm a max guy. It's like saying captain of the team, you know, like that kind of thing. It was, you added to it. Like, Zach Randolph at one point was offered a contract, I believe, at Portland. We'll have to ask Henry Abbott about this, but I believe the language and the wording of it was that he wasn't officially a max guy because some of the money was deferred, but over the long haul, it would have been more money, even though they don't really defer too much money in NBA contracts, if at all anymore. But Randolph actually made present day value a little bit less to be actually a max player. So he gave up a little bit of money to be like, no, I want to be maxed out now, right now, and every single year moving forward. And that's tailed off a bit, but I agree. There are going to be some awful, awful contracts handed out this offseason. This is from Ben in France. First thing, love the team turnaround. And someone like you finally moderating some of the insanely ridiculous things we keep hearing all the time. All right. If the T-Wolves land John Wall, would they be in a position with three point guards, Rubio, Flynn, and Wall? All three of them are good, great point guard, but they can't keep all of them. Here's my question. Do you see the Knicks trying to get one of those guys? They can try, but what the hell are they going to give up? You know? Would you give up Gallinari for Flynn? Maybe. Maybe both teams would say, hey, that's a great idea, but you're not going to get Wall for them. Like, really think about the assets that are left on the Knicks team, and there's just not that many. Maybe Tony Douglas and another draft pick. I mean, you can't trade away every single draft pick because then you have to go and sign guys. and those draft picks are so solid. So yeah, I think that they're going to wait, and try to get whoever they can, and everybody's going to call Minnesota and try to rip them off. And if Minnesota doesn't like any of the deals based on David Kahn's track record, he's not just going to give players away. And I think that's a good thing. Finally, this is, from Adam. Is John Salmon's, a poor man's Kobe Bryant? I'm amazed at his production on the Bucks. I can't tell you if it's high volume, low efficiency scoring on a team with, without big time scoring options, or whether he really might be a genuinely underrated talent in the league. Your thoughts? I think he's completely underrated. I've liked him for a really long time, going back to his Sacramento days. And I don't want to say like I'm just jumping on the bandwagon, but now he has an opportunity to score more because there's not anybody taking shots away from him. And as you've seen, the Bucks are better when they're trying to set up Bogut, and Jennings is taking a ton of shots. And what Salmons has done now has been pretty terrific. Now, from an efficiency rating, he's actually down a little bit in his Hollinger numbers. And his Hollinger numbers actually kind of get bounced all over the place, depending solely on how many minutes he gets to play. But he's at 38 minutes a game in the 16 he's played with Milwaukee, up from 33 a game that he played with Chicago. But he's scoring 20. The shooting percentage is pretty solid at 45 and 38. I don't know if he's going to continue to keep this up. His free throw numbers are terrific as well. But Kobe's a whole nother thing. I mean, Kobe, come on. We can't be doing that. If we're looking for the equivalent of, let's do this. John Salmons is like a Kobe Bryant homeless meal that the homeless guy isn't even that interested in eating. But it's still a really good player. As promised, we're going to talk a little Oklahoma City Thunder. Just a great story this season. And joining us from DailyThunder.com, part of our True Hoop blog network, it's Royce Young. What's up, Royce? How are you?
I'm doing fine today. How about you?
Good. You know, it's funny because I've been so happy about this team all season, and then we decide to have you on right after one of their worst losses of the year. What happened in Indianapolis? Is that strictly a deal with being at the Jay-Z concert the night before?
You know, that's what I wrote about myself, but, you know, I don't know if that had anything to do with it, honestly. I mean, that would be kind of wild speculation, I guess, to assume that, but I think more than anything, you know, it was a 1:30 start time in Oklahoma, and this team's only played one other afternoon game, which was on Martin Luther King Day against Atlanta. And I think it was just a lack of focus. Maybe it had something to do with the Jay-Z concert. But, you know, I guess a young team that's, you know, average age of 24 can be forgiven for falling asleep on a Sunday afternoon maybe once in a while.
You know, and this would be a huge mistake to even focus on this game and focus on Durant and Westbrook. What is it, the first time ever I saw from Elias that they haven't combined for over 20 points?
That's incredible.
Yeah, Durant had 16 and Westbrook went scoreless, correct?
Yeah, Westbrook did go scoreless. He was supposedly under the weather, a little ill. However you want to take that, but so that's why he only played like 9 minutes. But anyway.
I'm going to double check that, right? But here it is. The first time in 142 games they both played together. But here's the point, is if we focus on that, then we're missing the bigger picture here, and that this has been a really solid team. Coming in, what were expectations for a team that looks like a lock to be the playoffs?
Well, it's funny because, you know, I looked back on it, and I was reading myself some of the preseason predictions and where people had the Thunder. And honestly, if you ask any Thunder fan back in September what they wanted for this season, they wanted marked improvement. They wanted a team that went from 23 wins to maybe 32 to 36 wins, looked like they were getting better, and looked like maybe next year they could compete for the playoffs. And it's funny because our expectations have completely changed. Now it's playoffs or bust, and you know, we came into the season only just wanting just a improved competitive team. And now, you know, I'm upset with the big loss at Indiana, and because, you know, you start worrying about playoff seeding. I mean, I never thought in my wildest dreams I'd be thinking about home court advantage in the opening round of the playoffs. I mean, that's insane. But, you know, expectations coming in weren't very high, but they've, as with any team, when they're succeeding, they grow during the season. So that's where we're at now.
What kind of job has Scotty Brooks, the head coach, done this year?
He's done incredible because, you know, I can't speak for other teams necessarily, but to get into, you know, such a young team, get into their brains that defense is important. And that was the model coming in. That's what Sam Presti wanted to build a team around because he came from San Antonio. But to really pound it into their brains, and now the Thunder's, you know, sixth in defensive efficiency. They're one of the best in opponent field goal percentage. They hold teams to 95 points a game. And for Scott Brooks, you know, I don't know how great of a, you know, X's and O's guy he is. He doesn't really blow you away in that respect. But he really commands respect from the team. And he really grabs their attention in practice, and I think he motivates them to walk out onto the floor and to execute a plan and to really stick to what they want to accomplish.
Oklahoma City sitting two spots behind Utah for the number four spot. They are the number six spot with Phoenix in between them. When I watch them, Royce, I feel like one of the best things about them defensively is the way the roster's built. They're just longer than everybody. Westbrook's longer than the point guard. Cephalosha, if he's playing the two, is longer than somebody. Harden's obviously not the athlete or maybe, you know, even as long as some of the other guys we're talking about. Durant's always longer. Serge Ibaka, when he's in there, I mean, give me a break. Yeah. He's longer than almost everybody in the league. Do they talk about that and that being part of the team's makeup?
Absolutely. I mean, that was something they wanted: length, they wanted athleticism, and they wanted versatility. Because that's something that the Thunder's defensive game plan centers around, is that really, within the starting five, Nenad Krstić is the only guy that can't guard one of the other four positions. I mean, Jeff Green can get by on a switch guarding another point guard. He did it in Atlanta guarding Jamal Crawford for an extended time. And so I think that was a big part of it, is that they wanted guys that could defend multiple positions. They wanted guys off the bench that could do it. They wanted guys in the starting lineup that can do it. And a lot of it has to do with the length. A lot of it has to do with the athleticism. And a lot of it has to do with the scheme, because they switch on almost every ball screen. And you don't see a whole lot of teams do that, but they do that right now.
Yeah, very few teams can do that. Detroit, that was one of their big things back in the day, where Ben Wallace and Chauncey could switch on bigger guys and Wallace could switch on smaller guys. I want to talk about James Harden, because I didn't love him. I watched a ton of tape on him, and he's the number 3 overall pick, and I kind of went, I don't know. And it's funny, now that we look back on this draft, and we all were killing it, and it's turned out to be pretty solid. But he's missed 5 games with a hamstring thing, so that's not the biggest issue. I guess you can throw in when you expect him to come back. But how have they felt about his game? Because I feel like I have no idea what to expect from him night in, night out.
And that's the thing, is that, you know, not too many, you know, third overall picks come into the league and expect to come off the bench, which is what has happened with Harden. And that's mainly because Thabo Sefolosha is so valuable defensively. But I think that, you know, obviously people are going to look at, you know, Tyreek Evans is obviously a star, and he was drafted a spot behind James Harden.
But people, and so, you know this, have to be reminded that if he was in Oklahoma City, his role would be entirely different. Like,
absolutely.
Scottie Brooks and the entire city would, like, fight him if he kept trying to do the stuff that he's doing.
Exactly. You know? I mean, how can you split shots between Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and Tyreek Evans? It just wouldn't happen. And so that's why James Harden was kind of the fit at Arizona State. He was an All-American. He averaged 20 points a game, but he was unselfish. He created for others.
He has an old man's game to him, too.
Yeah, he's got the beard, so he looks older anyway.
beard helps, too.
Yeah, and so I think that's what kind of fit in, is that he was able to step in. He was able to play the role coming off the bench and not gripe about it, and he can create. He had a game, I can't remember the opponent off the top of my head, but he scored like 14 straight points in the fourth quarter. And that's the kind of game he has, is that he can take over, but there can also be other games where he just, you know, hits 2 3-pointers, scores 6 points, and has 4 assists. He's not blowing anybody away. He's not going to win Rookie of the Year. He's probably not going to be, you know, even first-team All-Rookie. But I think that we've seen his value in these past 5 games. Kyle Weaver's replaced him. And Kyle Weaver didn't score his first point until the fourth game that he played. And so, you take away Harden's 10 points a game, and the Thunder struggles with their second unit. So he's very valuable. He's not going to blow anybody away. Maybe in 3 years he could average 15, 16 points a game. I don't know. But he's kind of filled that role of sharpshooter from the outside, and he can provide some, you know, offensive punch off the bench.
Yeah, I was watching that game. I'm trying to remember if it was Sacramento or if it was Dallas.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
He had played like just a handful of minutes, and then they left him in for the entire fourth quarter.
He just came in. He hit just shot after shot. Yeah. Penetrating. I mean, it was impressive, and it kind of showed you what he can be, I think.
Jeff Green is a guy that I actually did like a lot coming out of school, because I feel like most of the good Georgetown players are even better as pros. He's at the point where he's 23 years now, 23 years old, hasn't been playing for 23 years. but he's put up some monster numbers, I would say, over the last couple weeks. But where is he? And I guess let me do this. You're the guy that watches him night in and night out. I probably watch 25% of the games just because I like watching him so much. But as much as I like him, I feel like he gets himself into trouble with his passiveness, but then there's nights where you feel like, I wish I had seen this assertiveness consistently. And then when you start asking the bigger question about who will make up this roster as they decide who they could possibly trade out or sign long term, I'm wondering what you in the front office think of Green and how he's played and overall what his future is.
You know, it's funny, because I think that I was talking with a friend recently, and he kind of said to me that he thinks Jeff Green is going to be the type of player, whether he spends his whole career in Oklahoma City or not, he's going to be the guy that every single year you're going to say, Jeff Green could be traded for this. He's going to be the guy that you're always putting in the trade machine and looking about who you could get. But I think the reality is that he's playing out of position a little bit. He's really not a true power forward.
No, not at all.
He has trouble matching up with Chris Bosh and Tim Duncan or whoever else inside. And so, you know, he's a little out of position. But the thing is right now, you know, who else do you play there, first of all? But the point that I keep making is that he's playing 40 minutes a night on a team that was expected to win 30 games and now is competing for the fourth seed in the West. So he's doing something right. He always seems to hit big shots. He, you know, and there's over the past 2 months, I can't tell you how many big three-pointers he's hit in the fourth quarter. And he plays pretty solid post-defense. You know, you shouldn't see your starting four-man averaging 5 rebounds a game. But that's my point, I guess, I'm coming back to, is that, yeah, you're gonna see what maybe you think you could get from Jeff Green. You know, he might be a valuable trade chip down the line, but at this point, I think the front office really likes him, and plus, he's Kevin Durant's best buddy, and I think Kevin Durant really values chemistry. And so, if you want to keep Kevin Durant around for a while, I think you need to keep Jeff Green around too.
Yeah, and remember too, Green was part of the Ray Allen trade for our listeners,
right?
When he actually was going to Seattle, but then obviously the team was moving, so Durant and Green both taken there on the top, was it top five picks, right?
Green was five and Durant was two. And then they're both from the D.C. area, and they actually grew up playing ball together. And I think that they're pretty good buddies. So I think that has a lot to do with why Kevin Durant likes Oklahoma City so much, as he likes his teammates.
Well, everyone has raved about Sam Presti, and I always feel like there's no such thing as perfect, you know? And he has been able to just swindle some people with cap space because he's had it. Whether it was the Kurt Thomas deal and getting two future first round picks out of it, whether getting Eric Maynard from Utah by being able to absorb Matt Harpring's deal. You know, he had the number two pick and he got Durant. But he took Westbrook higher than I think a lot of people expected him to be, and mm-hmm. Westbrook has turned out to be terrific. Green is good. Serge Ibaka, I want to get to there. But, you know, I don't know if it's worried is the right question, but how do you think this roster is going to be constructed in the future? Because you're going to have guys that you're going to have to pay major money for like the next 4 years in a row when you look at how the roster's built.
I mean, it's a great question. And
Durant's a max guy.
Yeah, and you know what? That's the thing, is that this summer, you know, July 1st, Durant can sign his extension, but Jeff Green's eligible the same day. So, you know, what do you do with Jeff Green's deal? And so, Sam Presti came from San Antonio. You know, they built around their big three, and I think Presti's trying to intend to do the same thing. But, you know, Russell Westbrook is, you know, I'm excited about how well he's playing, but he's almost playing too well because, you know, now you're starting to wonder how much money he's going to deserve for an extension.
You got to imagine he's a Rondo number, maybe a little less because Rondo has a championship, but let's face it, that championship 2 years ago had more to do with other guys than it did Rondo, despite him playing great. So if you're looking at Durant at like 15 plus million, and then you're looking at I don't know, Westbrook.
Green, 8-9 million, I don't know.
And and I usually always add a million or two for just the overspending tax that happens when you're re-signing guys. You know, Green may let him go get offers as a restricted guy next season, try to take care of Durant, but then you're looking at a change in the landscape of what the CBA is. So, you know, then what do you do? You know, you could look at it with Durant and say, hey, we're not even going to sign you. Let's see what the new CBA is, because we could be signing an outdated grandfather clause 6 year max contract when those don't even exist in a year from now.
That's why, it's so interesting. That's why, you know, I almost can't wait for July 1st. Durant said he would sign a max contract in Oklahoma City. But Oklahoma City, I think that somebody figured it up, they could save maybe even $20 million waiting on the new CBA. And for a small market team like the Thunder, you know, that could be huge. And that's the thing, is that they could re-sign these guys, you know, using the bird rights. But could Oklahoma City bust a luxury tax? You know, I don't know if Presti and Clay Bennett would want to do that. And so now you're going to saddle, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm horrible at math, but 70% of your cap space on three guys, and now you're trying to build around other guys. And then, Serge Ibaka, James Harden, Tabo Cephalosha just got an extension last year, but, you know, you don't have a whole lot of money to throw around in other places. So, I mean, Sam Presti is doing a great job, obviously, but it's interesting because, you know, where does the roster go? How do you fill up the rest? Right now it's completely full, and he's got 5 picks next year. So what does he do with those? I mean, there's a ton of questions.
Yeah, because, you know, if we're looking at a hard cap and no exceptions and some way to get over it, then, you know, you could be in a tough spot. But the team that has to sign LeBron, whether it's Cleveland or if it happens to be a new team, they're not going to be like, well, hey, LeBron, we actually only want to offer you 3 years because we're worried about what the CBA is going to be in the future.
Exactly.
Hey, Presti's been awesome. And you know this, too. There's always a little resentment from the older guys in the league that think, like, oh, he's the golden boy. He had nothing to do with Tony Parker. Like, I just always hear that stuff. It's kind of a funny league how it works that way, where there's just as many people willing to help you as there are to tell you how much every other GM sucks in the league. So,
people bring up all the time that, you know, he did hire P.J. Carlissimo.
Right, yeah. But, you know, like, I'd rather have you make a mistake with an NBA head coach, because they essentially all get fired after 2.5 to 3 years, than take, I don't know, Chris Douglas Roberts number two, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly.
So like, there's a big difference in little mistakes and monumental franchise changing mistakes. Final thought here. How does Oklahoma City transition from a surprise to a team that expects to win in the playoffs?
Yeah, and boy, I wish I had that answer. I mean, I'd love to know that, but I think right now that they're kind of fearless. They kind of don't think about what they're doing. And so, you know, I think Kevin Durant is the kind of guy that you can kind of walk behind in line, and I think he's going to lead the team. And to step in and win in the playoffs, I think a lot of it has to do, honestly, with matchups. They play the Lakers or even the Nuggets, who they've absolutely struggled with the past 2 years, then things are going to be difficult. But to just walk in fearless, play with an incredible amount of confidence, and really believe that you actually have a chance to move on is what this team is all about, and that's why they're at where they are, is because everybody thought that they wouldn't be anything coming into this season, and they just said, we'll prove you wrong, we'll be hungry, we'll be focused, and we'll come out and do it. And so if they can do that in the playoffs, you know, I'm not saying Western Conference Finals. I mean, that's ridiculous in my mind because playoffs were ridiculous, so I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around current expectations. But, you know, they could get out of the first round if they get a good matchup, I think.
Yeah, there's a difference between good young teams that are scoring teams, which is usually most of the part. But as you said, the most surprising thing, as I've been saying all year, I just can't believe we have a good, really good defensive team that's so young. All right, give me like 30 seconds or so on Serge Ibaka. He's at career... Well, at least season high. It's going to be career high in minutes, 19 per game here in March. And when I see him, not only is he great on rotating back to his initial man off a double team in the ball, he protects that rim like few guys do. I know he's raw, but we're talking about a dude that was in Spain last year and only 20 years old. That's as exciting to think about what he can be. And he didn't even have to score, man, not on this team. Just go get boards and scare the hell out of kids.
I think he's only been playing organized basketball for 6 or 7 years, but a lot of people ask what his ceiling may be, and my best answer is, you know, Chris Anderson with an offensive game, because right now Ibaka can protect the rim. He's high energy. I don't know if you saw his putback dunk in Toronto, but it was absolutely ridiculous. But he's actually got a 15-foot jump shot that he can step out and use. So, I mean, he's a high-energy guy. He's exactly what Oklahoma City needs off the bench right now. And honestly, I can't say whether or not he could eventually become the big man that everybody talks about that they need. He may be it. He's 6'11". He's built really well, and he's got a post-up game a little bit. So, and he can protect the rim, which is exactly what they need. So maybe he could fill that role, but he's only 20, so a lot of upside for him for sure.
Hey, Royce, awesome job. Royce Young is one of our best, part of the True Hoop Block Network. You can read his stuff, DailyThunder.com, every single day. Enjoy the rest of the season, man. We'll talk to you in the playoffs, all right?
All right, thanks a lot, Ryan, for having me on.
Royce Young, man, that guy is solid. All right, emails for Wednesday, NBA Today at ESPNRadio.com. We have the Fan Fix a Franchise for the Pacific Division. People do seem to like that, huh, Jay?
They do.
Okay. I don't know that we'll read them on Wednesday, but, you know, we just like to get 20 or 30 of these things together and, you know, rule out the other 1.4 million that I have to go through. Podcast is absolutely blowing up. And we'll see if my voice can possibly get any deeper on Wednesday, because this hurts.
I may have to recut the, you know, stats to impress the ladies with your voice.
Do you want me to try to do it right now? let's do one. Let's all right, let's read this promo here. NBA Today at ESPNRadio.com. That's the email, idiot. You just read it. How about this? NBA and ESPN Radio is Wednesday night. And that is the Lakers in San Antonio to take on the Spurs. Coverage starts at 8:45 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Radio. Check me if I'm wrong here, Sandy, but did I tell the San Antonio story? I did on the podcast once. It's really not that funny, so it makes me laugh whenever I think of San Antonio. But for some reason, my buddies and I, when we were younger, we used to just lie about where we were from all the time to try to get each other to laugh. So we'd just meet people and be like, hey, where are you from? And one of my friends, who's actually an FBI agent, it was just hysterical, and he just goes, San Antonio. And he was from, like, Boston. And this girl was like, where? And the way he said San Antonio really worked. I guess this really isn't that funny out loud. It was funny, though, when I thought about it about 30 seconds ago in my head. So I apologize. All right, let's grab a stat here to impress the ladies. How many guys do you think have turned off the podcast right now? Half?
Doesn't matter. We already got the download.
No, that's true.
Stats to impress the ladies.
I can definitely go lower than that guy can right now.
That guy was aided and abetted by a computer.
Was he?
He was. I know that guy very well.
Who is that?
That guy is me.
That's you?
Yeah.
Look at you. All right, this is going literally nowhere, because the one stat that I thought of, I didn't love, But I'll go ahead and do it.
So it's not really going to impress.
No, this will be stats to impress the twos. The Chicago Bulls have taken 536 less threes than their opponents in games this season, last in the NBA. Until then, I have nothing clever to say.
Thank you for listening to the NBA Today. Download more ESPN podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or on the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.